Welcome back to The Sharing Culture, the show that talks about sharing, who does it, why, the history, and a whole lot in between. I'm your host and executive director of Equitable Giving Circle, AJ McCrary, and today we're talking about sharing. We're talking a little bit about Equitable Giving Circle, what we do, how we do it, why we do it. And today we have Ms. Keen Talton Davis, one of our board members, and another one of our lovely board members, Ms. Bianca Mack. We have a book recommendation and a sharing activity at the end, so make sure you listen all the way through so you don't miss out. I'm looking forward to sharing with you today. Welcome, welcome. These are two of our amazing board members. Keen Talton Davis, I've known her since I was a baby. I don't know, maybe not quite a baby, but young AJ. We met through Les Femmes Debutantes, which is a local organization here in town, and it's been around for
72 years.
Ms. Talton Davis does so much in our community. She is a mama. She has a design company, Soapbox Theory. She works with Albina Vision Trust. She works with Les Femmes. I know I'm missing a whole bunch of other things that she does because she stays busy. She is on our board, and she is somebody that I have loved and been mentored by for years in all kinds of capacities. And it's an honor to work with her and to just be around her. I learn regularly and I'm encouraged all the time. And Ms. Bianca Mack is another one of our amazing board members. She's not from Portland, Oregon, but we have New Orleans in common, which is my chosen home. The city, the Crescent City, the boot. She's from New Orleans. New Orleans, not Louisiana. And if you don't understand that, holler at Google. Send us an email. We'll explain that to you. Ms. Bianca is a DJ. She is an organizer extraordinaire. She's worked with quite a few different organizations here in town, from Snack Block to Equitable Giving Circle to Race Talks. And I'm sure I'm missing at least two or three others. She's just a dope person, community auntie, and amazing cook, fashion icon. If you need a good song recommendation, she knows it. I love working with both of these women on this work and just getting to be in community with them. And I'm excited that they are here to share a little bit of their love and wisdom with all of us today. And what did I miss, y'all? I'm getting looks.
I don't know. I feel like that was pretty all encompassing. Hey, y'all, this is Bianca speaking. The deep voice. And no, I think that was a really well done synthesis of what both of us do, how we show up in the community, mm-hmm. how we show up in particular for Black and Brown community, especially Black community here in Portland.
Woot woot.
And yeah, just finding our places and figuring out our roles and standing in gaps as needed and just being really, I don't want to say essential or important, but definitely playing a note in a symphony of what it takes to make a community go. So,
yeah, I would say both y'all are important. I do. Both y'all are amazing.
I just don't want to identify myself as important. That's always kind of...
I'm saying it.
You can say it. Feel free.
I'm saying it, and I know that others feel the same way as I do. Both of y'all are shining stars, and it's cool to see like what you do in community with, you know, our team, but it's also really beautiful to see the things that y'all create and work on outside of our work together. Y'all are always up to something, always doing different things.
One must stay busy.
It's the season. Sun's out.
Season. Yes. All right. So I'm going to ask y'all some rapid fire questions. What was your most favorite thing anyone has ever shared with you?
I would say there's been a few occasions when just in everything I do, right? And that's with the DJing work. That's with showing up for pantry at EGC, emceeing events, all of it. People just coming up to me down the line and saying, hey, can I just like one-on-one with you real quick? Just seeing the way that you live and you just doing it out loud and doing it authentically in the way that you do really inspired me to, and then there's always some blank that each individual is kind of filling, right? One person was like, I saw you DJing on a rooftop, and it inspired me to really learn about DJing. I've had people say, hey, like, you encouraged me to sign up and do things at the capacity that I can to be a volunteer or to just stand in and help out with things. And it's always really flattering because I don't think of the things I'm doing as like, I do this to inspire people. I don't assign that like extra homework to myself in that way. But there's definitely this element of, wow, people really are watching and they're owning in on whatever it is that I'm doing. And they're finding pieces of themselves in the way I'm just living. And that is a great compliment because, again, it's not a show. It's not a, oh, I volunteer for Stripes. Oh, I do this for this accolade or this clout or whatever. It's just me being there, being present, and someone else seeing, again, some reflection of what they want for themselves and what I'm doing, and then going out and doing it for themselves and then telling me on the back end, hey, like, I'm doing this thing because of you.
Love that.
Yeah, I think for me, part of that is life, right? It's sharing life, which is amazing in and of itself. But very specifically is sharing joy. There is something about sitting with someone who is happy and excited and gets the giggles and can't sit still just because they're so excited and they're so happy about something. And then there's also that happiness and that joy where it's peace. And those are just two very different extremes of the same kind of end of range of emotions, mm-hmm. of joy and happiness. And that's where I love to live in and share with people, create and share my joy, share their joy, and just being in that space.
I love seeing both of y'all's faces when you talked about the favorite thing that you shared. And it wasn't like a physical item, but it's something that can happen anywhere organically, but both of your faces just lit up in the most beautiful ways. And I just want to hold a little bit of space for that because thanks for sharing that with me.
Thank you for sharing that with the folks who are only catching this as an audio medium.
I know. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. It's great. It's a good additional context for people who are only hearing this.
Thank you. Yeah. Next season, we'll maybe get the video. Next season.
Okay.
Yeah. What was the most meaningful thing that you've shared with somebody else?
That's tough because, again, I don't know what value I'm expected to like receive from offering something to someone else. I think this kind of loops back into the answer to the first question, which is, if I encouraged you, then I gave you that. If it led you to start your own thing that became this great big enterprise that grew out of this little mustard seed of observation, then that's really cool. I don't think that again, that I'm the person who is giving something to whatever corner of the universe I'm occupying with the intention of saying, yeah, you better get this out of it or else. It's never my motivator. That's never my objective. If it comes back to me in that way anyway, again, I try to frame it as a means of blessing someone without even realizing it. But I don't know. Like that comes in small things. That comes in, you know, hey, I had the five to put your GoFundMe over the top to get a window replaced. Or I was able to give you a ride somewhere when you were not sure that you would get someplace safely or whatever. I would probably rate those things in terms of meaningful givings of myself. But again, there's no business of mine to like assign, yeah, this thing I did like reign supreme of all others. So pretty tough. But just again, try to give in small ways that matter to people.
Right. I think for me, the most important or like my favorite thing has been sharing my plans for world domination. And I say that because in that there's a level of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, when somebody's vibing with you on that, it's like the most amazing thing. You're like, yeah. You know, when somebody says I'm down, it's like, okay, I found a good teammate and we can do some things, right? They're not somebody who is, when you share that vulnerability and you're saying, I want to do these absolutely amazing things that a lot of people don't think are going to work or wouldn't think would be in my realm. Mm-hmm. Finding somebody who says, no, that's some BS. I agree with you. Let's go do this. How can I help? Is just that return. That's so amazing in sharing. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about sharing is that when you give, there is always, even if you're not expecting to receive, there is always something that comes back to you.
Yeah. I love that. I love being able to think about sharing beyond just like physical things. Like I could share a book with you, like hand you a book and I'm sharing that book with you, or I can, you know, share a meal. And that's really like those are real concrete, obvious things. But I loved, you know, just sharing to share because it feels good. And it doesn't really matter what you personally get back, how, you know, as Bianca was talking about. And I love like you talking about vulnerability and being able to share thoughts and like being able to vibe on that. And yes, I want to live where the world where you dominate everything and change everything. Sign me up. This is a place where everybody will be happy and well fed and housed. And
yes, all these things.
Sounds like a great place with lots of art and color.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes. And my last rapid fire question is, what do you share the most?
I think for me, it's my time. You know, you mentioned I'm in all these different areas and all these different rooms. And my time is definitely something that is precious to me. But it also, because when you do share and it does come back to you, people invest in things that I believe in. So when I'm willing to put and share my time and share my energy into the things that I believe in, then that comes into where people are interested in doing the same. And they see the value in it because they know how my time works.
Time is precious, especially with littles. And you got some of those.
Mm-hmm. So it's, and you know, it's definitely all of these things with sharing is, I think I said earlier, you know, life is all about sharing one way or the other. Mm-hmm. It's what you do share, what you don't share, and sharing life with people who you care and love. It's just an amazing, amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I think my answer is going to be also pretty intrinsic in that way, but I share my visibility. And what I mean by that is, you know, as a Black trans woman living anywhere, there ain't a lot of me out here in this corner of the earth, certainly, but also in the world. And for me, it matters a lot to show that, hey, yes, I'm out here coexisting in community, building meaningful relationships with people, and doing so against a large and growing number of odds that doesn't want people like me to flourish, doesn't want people like me to thrive, doesn't want people like me really to exist, depending on how extreme you get. And still showing up and still persevering and still trying to be a creator and an agent of happiness and optimism and community and belief in oneself is something that I value greatly. And not on the sense of, oh, well, like I'm going to inspire your kids to trans up. Like, no, that's not the objective. The objective is for me to just live and for people to take from that whatever they're going to take. And for a lot of people, there is some measure of negativity they tend to depart the interaction with me with. And for a lot of others, it's very positive. And in some ways, it can shift some perspectives. And so my visibility is super important to me. And it's why when I decided to come out, I did so like pretty much cold turkey. I was like, yep, this is happening. And everybody is going to understand and meet me on the terms that I dictate. And it's been pretty wonderful to do that and for a lot of people to come together and say, hey, yep, no, you're good. And to really form a sort of garden of community around me that helps me to feel safe moving in the world. And to then be able to express myself and to operate and to work and to live and to love in a place that, you know, maybe before encountering me might not have been ready. And as a result of doing so, kind of became ready either on the fly or took some time to figure those things out. But none of that could happen if I felt like I still had to hide myself.
I appreciate both of those answers. Thank you. Love it. Love it. So glad to be in community with both of you. Like, I genuinely, from the bottom of my heart, I'm honored to be, to get organized with you, to get to share meals with y'all, to be able to call you and complain when I do. And, you know, and to just be, you know, showered back with love and to get to do fun stuff with you. Both are amazing. And on that note, I want to know what radicalized y'all, because I roll with tons of really radical world changers, people who are interested in a different world, a different experience. And so I want to know a little bit about what sort of planted that seed for y'all, or what has pushed you to live out loud as your authentic selves to help be a part of making this world better? Because you both make this world better.
I think that's a kind of hard one for me. And it's hard because I don't see, even though the work that I do is different from the norm, I don't see it as radical. I see it as the way things should be, and it shouldn't be surprising and radical.
Love that.
Right. So I think Black children should have schools and artwork that reflect them. I think that communities should be safe, and people should be able to go out and enjoy themselves without worrying about so many different things going on in the world. I think that there should be a corner for people to sit and have peace and relax and know that things are taken care of so that they can focus on the things that they need to focus on, right? I don't see that as a specifically radical thing. Mm-hmm. I see that as a very necessary thing.
I love that.
You know, and so in that, you know, you mentioned soapbox theory, and my motto around soapbox theory is cultivating Black joy. And really, I think the moments in that where that, you know, really kind of came to fruition, where I began thinking about that, is so long ago that it's just been part of so many evolutions of me, right? That those seeds were planted back in middle school. You know, when you have, when you're, you know, a young creative child and you feel supported in that, mm-hmm. and you have options to do different things, and you have mentors who, you know, they're on your wavelength and they look like you, and they, you know, you share cultural things with, and you feel supported in that, then you're able to go out into the world and do those same things. Mm-hmm. And so having those kind of roots in my life are like, well, this is how it's supposed to be. It really shouldn't be anyway, other than what I've learned and what I've come to understand. So I don't know that there's in my adult life, a specific inflection point for that. But then also with being in that creative realm, it's always been a thing of, why is it this way? Why aren't we doing it a better way? Why does it continue to go on and on and on? And those questions just kind of continue throughout time.
For me, it was coming up in a single parent household left when I was really young. Relationship is something I'm not going to get into in this podcast, but mom made a way out of no way. And some of the folks who we encountered in similar struggles would give me little morsels of things can be better than this. And I don't want to be here. I don't like the terms that have me here, but things can be better than this. And that kind of went hand in hand with my own personal feelings about myself and who I am and who I should be expected to show up in the world as. So my challenging of my own gender from a young age was a huge factor in leading me down a path to where it was like, hey, things don't have to be this way. See these terms and these conditions that so many of us have to operate within. And then the ruling class started kind of changing the rules on the fly on us. The messaging I got through my K-12 education was go to college, go to college, go to college. It'll make you better, it'll make you better, it'll make you better. And by the time my cohort finished college, it was, congratulations, you're mediocre now. And alongside with that, at the same time as I was, you know, completing my coming of age was my own walking away from organized religion. And some of the ways in which the constraints and the punitive nature of be this way or else always left me like, there's a better way we can do this. You know, we can do things in a more reward-based manner as opposed to a, we're going to take things away from you if blank. And keep in mind, I was saying this as a not out 18-year-old who nonetheless saw the fact that I still had this internal battle going on within myself, raging and persisting and serving as my perpetual little flame of things don't have to be this way. Mm-hmm. And unlearning some pretty bad messaging I got along the way also helped with the radicalization. Attending strikes and protests and walkouts in years that begin with the digit one, been in these streets in some sense or another for a really long time now. And seeing folks in 2020 who maybe didn't have very sophisticated convictions, but understood that there was some principle that they were like leaning in on was just like, I can see it in your eyes. You're not like all the way here, but if you stick with this, you're going to come along. And then the world started gradually creeping back to its old normal. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, there's happy hours 3 days a week. And there's summer blockbuster movies and things. And those convictions that I knew were not very sophisticated, I was right about. And so even that, right, where it's like, hey, this was very limited time only, really just started forging my own fires a little bit more intensely. And it's been just this ongoing and ever building notion of things don't have to be this way. Things can be better. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes radicalism gets sort of miscast as changing things strictly for the sake of changing them. And in my case, and in the case of the people I'm most closely organized with, it's not changing just for the sake of it. It's changing to get better yields. It's changing to get better futures. Mm-hmm. It's changing to get futures in many cases. Mm. And so many of the ways that things are currently going that, you know, operate from this punitive framework can be better. And one-on-one, you can explain that to an individual and they're like, oh yeah, things can be better. You try to tell 10,000 people and they're like, I don't know. That seems like a lot of work that we got to do to get all 10,000 people on the same, you know, beat of the drum. But we can do it. It's just people got to buy in. And what keeps me radicalized is the fact that I bought in a long time ago.
Mm. I love that question because it just to give context that radicalization, being radical, looks and feels like a lot of different things. And a lot of the times, especially for Black organizers, it's not about this like something so different. It's really like a seed of hope, right? Like it's, we are this way because we want and we can envision better. And it's not some sort of, as you mentioned, Bianca, punitive, you know, we want revenge. We want it to be better for everybody. Yeah, I love that. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. Y'all know that sharing is my most favorite thing.
I was sensing a theme.
You know, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day, Equitable Giving Circle is hardcore about sharing. It's, you know, we share with our community, we share education, we share literal resources, food, we've done housing assistance, plants, care packages, laughter, dancing. That's one of my favorite thing at Pantry is that you will definitely see somebody dancing, whether it's an elder with collars, whether it's our director team just feeling a vibe, whether it's a board member off to the side having a moment of just pure joy, whether it's just a person who's like, oh, this is a song, I like this song. Yeah, but beginning and end of the day, Equitable Giving Circle is about sharing. And yeah, so it makes sense. And it's also, you know, sharing something that we do all the time. And I think a lot of people don't realize how deep their relationship is with sharing. Because of capitalism, we have these big boundaries, these big walls up around it. And it's, you know, it's, I'm only sharing if I'm giving you dollars. I'm only sharing if I'm, you know, giving you something, but it's so much more than that. And it's a lot more organic and a part of people's everyday than most currently have a relationship. So on the topic of Equitable Giving Circle, or EGC as most of us just refer to it because it's easier. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite thing about Equitable Giving Circle? Mind sharing.
I think, well, maybe the first thing that comes to mind, because there are many, but the first thing that comes to mind is when I get to tell people about EGC and they're like, they do what? And there's excitement and there's awe and people are just back to that joy thing, right? They get mm-hmm. happy about it and they get happy to see that there are people that are doing the work and that community members are having their needs met mm-hmm. in so many different ways. So I think that's maybe one.
Yeah, not to echo that necessarily, but one of the most delightful things is just the flow of people that come through and their own little individual capacities to either be openly joyous about what it is that we're doing, whether it's at the pantry or at one of our events or whatever, or just feeling a sense of reprieve, like, yes, mm-hmm. faces that look like mine. Both of those things matter. Both of those stimuli, both of those reactions to what it is that we present just by showing up in the way that we do matter a ton. And so when someone's just like, yo, I got 15 minutes on this lunch break, I'm trying to grab what I can get quickly at the pantry and then boogie back on out to where I got to be. To be able to stand in that gap for that person is super meaningful. Someone who's going to linger and hang out for a little while and be like, hey, like y'all are jamming over here. And I don't know, I told some friends they're going to come by soon. And then seeing people just see, you know, old familiar faces. This happened a couple months ago. Really nice day out, and one of our community members saw an old friend, but the friend didn't immediately recognize them, and they started doing the sort of name trade-off, right, where it's like, you so-and-so's daughter, no, you used to go to this church with these people at this time service, and eventually they found a connection point where they were like, yep, we know each other. We have known each other for a really long time. It is so good to see you again. Mm-hmm. And being able to be an agent for a little singularity like that is always super cool. Now, I don't know what these folks' actual relationship to each other might have been, but it was good that in a moment they were able to have that familiarity of, wow, like, you know, whatever has caused us to not see each other for as long as we have, whether that's displacement, whether that's passage of time, whether that's family changing circumstances or whatever. It'd be nothing at all. But to be able to create moments like that means a lot to me as someone who has been around EGC for a really long time now, and being able to watch as we cultivate these personal community relationships, new and old, is priceless.
Yeah. I want to add to that too. So we both were talking about connections and joy and needs fulfillment. But I think on top of that is having that in a space within the Black community and speaking from there is enough, right? Mm. Speaking from a space that there is enough to go around, go ahead, get what you need, and things can be replenished, right? So it's that getting out of that sense of limited resources, even though obviously, you know, you got to take some time to do things, but getting out of the language of limited resources and mm-hmm. into the language of
abundance.
Thank you.
Both landed there. Like we're both looking in opposite directions for those of you who are listening, and we just generated the word abundance together. Yes. Like it was this real kismet.
Yeah. I love, one of my favorite things about Pantry, particularly Pantry, is that I randomly get to see community members that I haven't seen in a really long time who, you know, I grew up around, was in whatever space. And this is a couple months ago, there was an elder and I hadn't seen her since I was like maybe 9 years old. She was one of my dad's clients and it was so cool. And she was like, oh my gosh, I remember when you were just this, you know, loudmouth 9 year old, not listening. And I particularly remember seeing her when I was at my dad's office because I had, I don't know, gotten to some ruckus and was banished to his office and not getting to do fun things. And so I was just at his like spare desk. And she was there for whatever insurance needs she had. And, but I just remember her when I was little, just this really fun, loud, joyous woman. And she's now this fun, joyous, loud elder. And getting to have those connections, as Bianca was mentioning as well, it's really cool. It's cool to serve the community that helped raise us. Mm-hmm. Like that for me is such an honor. And definitely when I think about like who I wanted to be when I grew up, I wanted to be like 107 things. So I'm still working on that. But one of those things is like to be somebody like who gives back and who is, you know, part of community in this way. It's really special to get to do that. It's such an honor. Especially in this capitalistic world where it's, you don't always get to use your skills in this way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's something that folks don't know about EGC? Dun, dun, dun.
Something maybe folks don't know is the wide variety of events that we actually do.
More than
a pantry and a box at your door once a week. We have, by the time you hear this, it will have been passed, but keep your antenna up for Black Family Game Night. Do another one, even September.
Yeah, it's once a quarter.
Yes. And so, you know, by the time you hear this, would be a great time to be, you know, dialing in and getting the family together saying, hey, we're going to, you know, play some cards and, you know, have trivia and giveaways and, you know, dinner and other people in community to meet. So that's just one example. You know, we've done books and plants jams. We've done, you know, a great assortment of community events, you know, Black Mothers giveaways in May around Mother's Day weekend. Usually right after.
That event this year was so beautiful. Photos, flowers, self-care items. I think there was like a movement yoga thing that happened, and then there was also like singing bowls. Like, such a beautiful celebration. Sorry to interrupt.
No, trust me, that's a great one, because actually I had to miss that event. I had a I was DJing. I had a gig, so I missed that one, unfortunately. But it's always good to hear that the things that we're doing are really reaching people in a meaningful and impactful way. And that we're continuing to do this. It's not like, oh, live one time only, and then like we're never doing it again. Mm-hmm. We're hoping to build things that sustain and that people continue to find and locate and share with their communities and bring each other together, because we create it to give or to provide in some way. Mm-hmm. And it means a lot to bring people into the fold and to say, hey, like, we can get you a box, we can get you some plants, we can get you things that will edify your life in some meaningful way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what I would say kind of echo what Bianca just said, but that there is some, I think one thing that people don't know and don't understand or really don't think about is that it is more than, you know, it is more than the food programming. But then also that it is free, you know, it's free. There are, you know, and people don't necessarily understand free and no strings, meaning you don't have to put yourself out there and all of your vulnerability in order to get your needs met. Mm-hmm. And those needs might just be coming to hang out with folks at Pantry Day, right? Yeah. It doesn't have to be about the food. It might be coming to hang out at any of these events. Mm-hmm. Come see some brown faces, hang out with Black community, and just be in these spaces where you're celebrated. And it doesn't matter how, you know, what's going on with you. You're celebrated because you're there.
Mm. You're cherished and you're welcomed. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that about our team, that our team really is grounded in this work and loves what we do. Mm-hmm. Like, our whole team really loves what we do and enjoys giving back to community. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that our team also organized from a place of knowing. And I think that's like a lot of folks who do, whether it's social service work or community work, they don't always organize from a place of knowing. Some people organize from a place of reading, mm-hmm. which feels different when implemented.
Right.
Mm. And I really like the depth of our work. So for those that don't know, holler at our website, EquitableGivingCircle.org.
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 Yeah.
It is a beautiful website. It's in the process of getting a little bit of a makeover, which I'm excited for everyone to see. But we have a housing program and we are looking for dollars. So if you're out there with dollars to give, that'd be a great place to invest some of those. And one of the part of our first part of our housing program is giving people 3-month rent and mortgage relief grants, because it's really important to keep our community from falling into houselessness. And it's also better for the humans involved in that. Like, if that is the situation that is, you know, pending, it's much better to help people stay in their home than try to rehabilitate, you know, once a home is lost, items are lost, and the displacement. Mm-hmm. Economically, it's much easier to keep people housed than to help people rehabilitate. And it's just so much more traumatic once people have been displaced. And our second part of our housing, so like, holler at those dollars, y'all, is housing a cohort of Black single mothers and a few elders. So if you got a building to donate, my email is info@equitablegivingcircle.org. Comes right to me. Happily work with you on that. But we want to house the cohort of mothers and their children. Let them breathe. We'll get them food, work with them, and help them save to get into a property of their own. So we're really thinking about housing from a different perspective. We also have our food program, which is our flagship program. So it's our home delivery. We deliver to about 285, at the time of recording, 285 families a week, the same families. And then we see about another 100 families a week at Pantry. And we're trying to grow that. We're trying to get into a free store. So fingers crossed, we got a proposal out for that. And then we have our community wellness, which looks like our plant jam, collecting and passing out plants to Black and brown folks. our care packages. We do a really big care package push once a year. And then randomly throughout the year, we have our community events, which looks like our Earth Day, which is really fun because yay Earth. Shout out to the orcas. we're rooting for you. Let us know how we can support. We have Mother's Day. We celebrate Juneteenth. We do a back to school event and an end of the year holiday extravaganza. And we pass out resources, celebrate. It's just a good old time. We also have workshops that we do, game night. So there's a lot of programming ongoing. So follow us on Instagram, look at our website to stay informed of what's coming up. Because we love seeing community at them. And as my team members mentioned, we love to see you and we want to see these things grow. And now we also have this podcast and we have some other fun in-person meetups coming up in this next season. So definitely follow along and get involved because there's a lot of ways to get involved, whether it's being a participant in our programming, whether it's being a volunteer. And anybody, all colors, all genders, all everybody's, all, I don't know, old, young, are welcome to come volunteer. There's no, like, I don't know, sometimes people think, oh, I'm not a Black person, I can't. Shout out to John, who is our oldest volunteer.
Hey.
We love you, John. He's an older white man. He was a teacher. And when I say John is serious about his volunteering, John is serious about his volunteering. My favorite John story, and I will share this because it's too cute. We were being interviewed by the news, and John was packing up these strawberries, and the person interviewing John was very much trying to get John to stop packing the strawberries and paying attention to the camera. And John just kept on doing his task, and he was like, no, the people need the strawberries. I got to get this handled. And that is John. If we called him right now and was like, hey, could you help? He'd be like, well, let me finish my such and such. I'll be there in 45 minutes. So we got all kinds of volunteers. Probably will not get a second John because he's just his magical self. But we'd love more wonderful people to come in and get to know us and let us get to know you and help us move this work.
Yeah, just bring your capacities. You know, yeah. We know what we're doing, but we also included in that know how to take the skills you have and mm-hmm. to really max them out in a way that positively impacts our community, does not cost you in any meaningful way, and will leave you feeling good. This isn't a thing where we're like trying to make people feel bad about stepping in and helping. It's quite the opposite. We want you to feel good about doing it. We want that to energize your soul in a way. We want that to come out in a manner that maybe even inspires you to invite a friend or three to join you, even if they can't commit as much as you can. But if you've got a talent, something you want to share with EGC after reading our website and you're like, hey, here's a gap I can stand in, please reach out. We'd love to have you.
Say that. Yeah. And I think it's really important for people to tap in and, you know, building community is an everybody activity. And it doesn't always, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day and they were, you know, she has just had their second baby. And she's like, I don't really have time. Da, da, da. And I was like, yeah, but there's a season for everything. So like right now doesn't make sense because you have a brand new human that you got to, you know, wrangle and do all the things with. But there's a season for everything. And I think a lot of people don't pay attention to that with community building and being a part of community. And the other thing about when you're in community, you have community, and it also changes, as Bianca just mentioned, how you feel. It's a magical feeling, and it changes you at a cellular level.
Right.
Yeah. Did we miss anything I was talking about EGC?
I think so. Again, I think that for much of what we do, it's scheduled, right? We do the pantry every Thursday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. We are doing the Black Family Game Night quarterly. We're doing things on a schedule. And then we also have events that coincide with you know, like we mentioned, Earth Day, Mother's Day, so forth and so on. And so it's worth it to, again, view our website, tap in on our schedule, see what we got coming up, and find your way, whether it's a recurrent thing, whether it's a one-time thing. You know, the back to school will be here by the time you hear this, and we would like to fill many backpacks with pencils and paper and clothing and things that will just make that experience a little less harrowing for our community. Because one of the things that we know is that funding in education is not keeping pace with where it's supposed to be based on what we're asking of our children to be able to do. I don't have kids, but community auntie, again, based on what we're asking our children to be able to do, the funding just isn't matching the ask. And so that gets shifted to, oh, well, the people in the community have to buy the dry erase markers and have to buy the Kleenex and have to buy the notepad paper and have to buy the this and have to buy the that. And these things all get shared in a community way. But UGC for the last several back to schools now has stuffed backpacks and given those out to our community members to take that $400 back to school shopping list down to maybe like a $65 back to school shopping list. Mm-hmm. We can't do everything. We're not customized back to school list shopping necessarily, but we get an idea of what's going on and we try to load y'all up with really good quality supplies that hopefully last a decent portion of the school year, if not the entire time. And that is, again, all a part in how we give back, and it's all a part in how we make economic impacts, because community steps up for us. Community helps us fill those bags. Community helps us distribute those bags. Community receives those bags. So everyone has a note to play.
Ooh, that economic part. Ooh, let me speak on that real fast. So one of my many favorite, like everything about EGC is my favorite. I just am so spoiled in this way that I get to do this meaningful work that does inspire me with people that I truly, truly admire and love. A lot of our work, all of our work, has this economic backbone. So we raise money. We are a $1.2 million organization 3 years in a row. Woot, woot. No small feat. And I will celebrate that because coming out the door, we have come strong and stayed strong. Mm-hmm. We buy from Black and Brown food purveyors. We spend our money with Black and Brown professionals. Our insurance agent is Black. We've used BIPOC mechanics, not used, but worked with, dropped our vehicles on with. we've worked with a gamut of different talented professionals and really are intentional about spending the dollars we raise in our community in this meaningful way. And that is something that is really different and unique about our work, because not every nonprofit and not every organization, business is intentional in that way. Even like we'll get stuff screen printed from a Black screen printer. I think our printing company is not for our flyers. They're a local women, I think they're a queer owned company. But we're really intentional about, if it's not a Black person, is it a brown person? If it's not a Black or brown person, it's got to be a queer person. If it's not a queer person, it's got to be a woman. Like really intentional about making sure that we're spending our dollars in a way that is empowering and supporting our community with these ripples, because money is really a big part of this world that we live in and how things move, and we can make a difference. So in addition to making sure that the community that we are in, that we serve, that we are building with, is being supported with, you know, our different programming, we're also making sure that these dollars are being spent in impactful ways. So that is something that I really love. And it's really cool. It's really special. When we first started this, my dad was like, I don't know if you're going to find a Black person that, you know, that, and my dad is Black. And he was a small business owner my entire life. So he'd be like, I don't know, you're going to find that. Are you going to find that person? And I'd be like, oh, Dad, the internet. you know, and I'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning being like, can't wait to tell him. I'd be like, guess what I was doing all night? I found a Black professional that does some random thing that we can potentially work with, that we could hire. And it, when we first started, it was like really a game. Like he would just be laughing at me like, this chick. And it was almost like a puzzle, especially in Portland, which is, you know, one of the whitest places in America. What is it? 6% Black here. About that. So very small, but we out here.
For sure.
We're here. Six is a small number, but it's a big number of people when you put it up against 650,000. So mm-hmm.
Facts.
We can be found.
Yeah.
We have names. Things we do.
Absolutely. So do y'all have any questions? I guess you each get to ask me a question. That's our next little part. Uh-oh.
What is one thing EGC hasn't done yet that you want to see happen?
Ooh. I feel like that's such a big question. For me, I guess there's two things that we haven't done yet and I'm really excited to do. One is our free store. So the goal is to grow our weekly pantry into a free store that is open, 3 to 4 times a week for a good, you know, maybe like 5 or 6 hour blocks, and kind of varying hours so that, you know, folks' different schedules still can pass through. I'm really excited about that. And the free store, the way that we as a team have envisioned it, will have both the produce items and grocery items, protein, but also practical things. Like we do at Pantry, depending on donations and what we're able to conjure up, have, you know, various household items or toiletries. But I'd like our free store to be stocked with that stuff all the time. I just remember when my kid was little, how much, you know, diapers or toilet paper or laundry soap, even just having to buy toothbrushes in between, like, I always get them from the dentist because that's me. But it's, you know, in between that, like sometimes if something happens to it or you lose it or whatever, you know, that stuff all adds up. And if you're on a tight budget, to be able to access those things in nice quality. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited to see that. And I also am really excited to see our housing program really materialize and grow beyond just the, 3 month rent and mortgage relief grants, but to be able to house a cohort of Black single mothers and to help them breathe and heal and then boost them into the next, like their next phase, which, you know, will be multiple things. But part of that is being able to buy property and own that is really something I'm excited to see. And partly because Portland is this place where gentrification has been perfected. We're seeing, I don't even know, I was talking to a historian a couple months ago and she was like, we're on like wave 15. And I just mm-hmm. had to stuff my eyeballs back in my face. So as this place that gentrification has been perfected, as this place that is teaching urban development and sustainability globally, I think that Portland is such a unique place to be piloting really creative programming, not just us, but there's a plethora of incredible other organizations in town who are also piloting, or I can't even say we're piloting, we're doing these incredible different types of, you know, bodies of work. I want to see the dollars be invested into this work, partly because our numbers are smaller, that 6%, we're able to see the positive outcomes of this work in a different way quicker than if you put this programming, which should happen, in larger metropolitan areas with a larger Black and Brown populations. So I'm really excited both about that free store, our housing program, and just really being able to use this data, the things that we're learning from doing this work, to be able to help influence, larger bodies of work beyond just our, you know, our little city here on the river.
Yeah, and you actually answered my question about scale. So,
scale. Mm-hmm. I don't want EGC to like personally like be, you know, EGC global. That sounds really overwhelming and problematic. But I think that EGC has this really unique opportunity as we grow to work with other organizations, to work with other communities, to, you know, support and, you know, show these things worked for us. This didn't work. Here's our blueprint, you know, take what is useful, as well as being able to be used as like, this is research, right? Like this has been tried. This is proven it works. Cause something that a lot of people don't realize when you go to funders, when we're talking about, supporting Black, I'm going to say specifically Black led work, oftentimes funders are like, oh, we don't know because we haven't seen this before. It hasn't been done, or this is new, or it has some other, you know, excuses. And it's like, y'all haven't funded our community or our work ever. So we don't always get this long time data. And oftentimes funders are really excited about funding planning or the idea, but not implementation, you know? And so that hurts communities across the country. And so I want us to be able to, you know, work with funders and say, hey, it worked here. It could work anywhere. And if we can find Black and brown farmers to work with in Portland, then there are Black and brown farmers to work with across this nation and beyond. Mm-hmm. So yeah, scale wise, I want us to be stable doing what we're doing here, but then to be able to, from like a funding standpoint, influence and push funders, you know, everywhere to do better and be better. And then also, you know, work with other communities and say, hey, you could take this and, you know, do it in your flavor, your way. This is how we did it out here. Okay. And we do have some seasoning in Portland.
Yeah, that might not be like the Allentown, Pennsylvania chapter of EGC, but, you know, that there's something, someone's doing some things there. And again, like, I think the idea of being more of a mirror than like a series of roots is super, you know, it sets an intention and lets people know, hey, like, this is what we're focusing on, but hey, feel free to figure out what's working with us and see how it might apply to your corner of the earth.
Yeah. And, you know, like, happily, I'm happy to share information with folks. Like, this is what we're doing. Like, we're a nonprofit, so it's not like anything that we do is private. It's not a secret. So happy to share that information. And if you can, it can be used in other places. I hope you use it and do it better. That's how I see it.
I mean, that goes back to sharing, right?
Right. Like, happy to share what we're doing. And I hope that other, you know, other folks in other communities can double down and continue to have this type of work, you know, be mobilized and grow. Cause being able to share no strings attached is life-giving. Like, we don't need a sob story. We don't need to know your trauma, like, because that can be traumatizing. Mm-hmm. We don't need to re-traumatize community members when they're needing help. And ultimately, the goal is to really not even need these kinds of services, right? Like, pushing us to a world where everyone's needs are being taken care of. And this is one of the stepping stones to get there. Yeah. Right. I'll ask y'all one last time. Did we miss anything? Is there any other juicy bits that y'all want to add?
I mean, I'll just continue making the plea. We are doing good work in the community. Our results speak for themselves. And we, again, would love to have you in the capacity that is appropriate for you. Don't want to run anyone ragged or too thin or feeling like they're incapable of keeping up with what it is that we're doing. But if you have a skill to share, we greatly appreciate having you.
Yeah, more people tapping in make it easier for everybody.
Yeah. you know, it all, so many things just boil down to resources too. So whether that, again, just whether that resource is your time, your money, your energy, your voice. It's all about that sharing and just kind of getting back to the beginning of this conversation. When you share, I think good things come back to you.
Facts. Yeah. Facts on facts. All right, I have a book recommendation for everybody today because every single episode is a book recommendation, and these are all, except for Chocolate Cities, which I am reading this summer, is a book that I have read and have loved. So this book this week is Black Food Matters, Racial Justice in the Wake of Food Justice, and it's edited by Hannah Garth and Ashante M. Reese. And it's a collection of essays from different organizers. And it is a beautiful, thoughtful compilation of essays. And it really talks about both the history of food access and food justice. It talks about what is needed. It talks about different programs that are happening and different ways of organizing. And anybody that's doing food access work or food justice work really should be looking at this. The Black community has been doing food justice work since the beginning of time, particularly African-Americans or Black folks here in the United States. Sharing of resources, sharing of food has been critical for survival. It's ingrained in our culture. It's ingrained in the way that we build, the way that we even just have community. Can't go to a Black person's house and they're going to offer you food. Even if they're like, it's a small random something. I offered somebody some tea and granola. They popped up on me the other day. And I was like, that's what I have right now. But I was still, you know, going to offer a snack, even if I knew they were just passing by. But it was like, oh, do you need anything? So this book just, it talks about a lot of things. It talks about the food system, but it also, you know, it offers a lot of hope, the history, and just, you know, solutions. And it's beautifully written by Black folks, and I cannot recommend it more. Even if you're not in food access, but you're just wanting to know a little bit more of a history or interested in ways that you can grow your own understanding of, you know, racism, this is a good book for that. And lastly, because every episode, actually I have two things, getting ahead of myself. My second to last thing is our homework assignment. So every episode we've got an action thing for y'all to do to practice. And so this episode, I'm inviting you all to share a meal with somebody, whether it's a new person in your life, whether it's a loved one, a friend, a neighbor, but share a meal. Doesn't have to be fancy. It could just be some sandwiches. Could be tea and granola. that granola was tasty. it can be a fancy meal that you go out to eat. It could be something simple. Just sit down and have a meal with somebody. A lot of learning and connectivity does happen over meals. And so encouraging everybody just to take some time and to do that. And it could be with a bunch of folks or just one, but share a meal. And then, you know, as always, just going to plug our website, equitablegivingcircle.org, asking y'all to sign up as a volunteer, asking y'all to sign up as a one-time donor or a reoccurring monthly donor. Your dollars, whether it's $10 or $1,000, makes a difference. Something that you could do if you are inclined to is gather some friends over a meal and everybody put in $20. And together you've created your own tiny giving circle and you've made a difference. So asking you to think deeply about the ways that you can share in your immediate community, in your broader city community, and your broader world community. And again, thank you everybody for tuning in with us today. And thank you to you two lovely humans that I get to share with all the time for being here today and just talking about sharing an equitable giving circle.
Thanks for having me.
This is great. Always good to talk and always get to share about what we do.
Love y'all.